Okay. Before I start, I would like to take the same opportunity that Rabbi Blake chose to say a tremendous thank you to Rabbi Jacob Goodman for this beautiful graphics that he did with our booklet. It has been his editing and pressure that he put on me to make it look nice. It's been very impressive. And I'd like to thank Rabbi Blate for undertaking this whole project. It's been something which is... The suggestion, the push to do it, getting the sponsors, making the phone calls, pulling the people in, it's been his responsibility. He's taken it with a smile. We had some interesting moments at the last night to make a final decision. Should we go ahead with it? Are we scared of the snow or not? We decided to go ahead with it. And Bez Hashem, the next event that we'll do will have even more people because there won't be any scare of snow to anybody out there. I would also like to take an opportunity to say thank you to the yeshiva. The yeshiva is what creates the kollel. The kollel is the extension of the yeshiva. It's when the members of the yeshiva are able to get married, continue to learn after they're married for a period of time, and develop Baruch Hashem into special Bnei Torah, which are able to learn with you and be available to learn with you, but to create a place of Torah in this city. And looking at, once we're mentioning the yeshiva, we have to mention obviously Rabbi Einemer Zatzal, that Rabbi Einemer was the person who had the vision, had the dream to create the yeshiva high school, and then eventually to the yeshiva Gedola. And we're sure that right now that Rabbi Einemer is having tremendous hanoah from what we've accomplished. This is a tremendous ilah for his neshama, that the every day of the learning in yeshiva, especially a day like this, that the community is coming in to learn, many members of his community coming in to learn in the yeshiva, it's a special ilah neshama for him. Taking the step further, the Rabbi Merkin, who has the responsibility for carrying the yeshiva on his shoulders, the financial responsibility day to day, everything which we do is only because of the efforts that he does tirelessly day and night. We owe a tremendous amount of akaras hatov to Rabbi Merkin for the fact that we're able to come to learn this day and every day. The yeshiva is available to learn, where people are here at 5:30 in the morning, people here at 12 o'clock at night, and every hour in between. There's people learning in this yeshiva because of the responsibility that Merkin has. And we owe a tremendous amount of akaras hatov to Ray Merkin. I just want to use the opportunity to say thank you. Last but not least, Baruch Hashem, the Rosh Yeshiva, and I have been working together now for almost 18 years. It's been a tremendous schus to work together with him. The Yeshiva Gedola, which is the progenitor of the Kollel, is only because he was willing to undertake this, to the Mesiras Nefesh, to create a Yeshiva Gedola, come to Silver Spring, and do what it all of the effort that it entailed to create such a yeshiva. We're looking forward to Bez Hashem, and Mashiach should come, and the yeshiva will be transplanted to Eretz Yisrael, and many years together we'll be zechut to learn together Torah together, Bez Hashem. So there's a story about a shtetl yid. He comes one day, meets a Jew from New York, and he's talking about the shtetl, talking about New York, what's the difference between the shtetl and New York. So the shtetl yid says, my shtetl, we have 200 Jews, and we have 200 goyim. So the New Yorker, he says, but in New York we have about 2 million Jews, but we have about 6 million goyim. So the shtetl yid scratches his head and he says, I understand one Shabbos goy per person, but why do you need so many goyim? Okay, it fell flat. Okay. So there's a musa called a Shabbos goy. All right? And it's a phrase which has been probably existing in Klal Yisrael for I don't know how many generations. And the really starting point is, before we get to what's called a Shabbos goy, which means you can call the goy in to do certain things for you, we have to know that there's something which is prohibited. And that which is prohibited is called a Mir La'akum. There's an issue, the prohibition to tell a non-Jew to do work for you. And we need to discuss and understand that prohibition, and then we can talk about when it's permitted. So I would like to divide the shir to two parts. The first step is you learn through the packet, you look at some of the sources, and I want to clarify some of the points which will come up from the study of the sugya of the booklet. And then we will possibly touch on some points which are halacha l'maisa, practical applications halacha. Again, I'm not your posik necessarily. As I point out, a person should ask their your local Orthodox rabbi. I'm local. Hopefully I'm Orthodox. Hopefully I'm a rabbi. But I'm not necessarily your local Orthodox rabbi. So at the end of the day, you're going to be asking your local Orthodox rabbi, but you'll be more informed and understand after this year. So we presented first that we know that the Chachamim have prohibited for a Jew to ask a non-Jew to do work for him on Shabbos. And let's understand why. What was the motivation? What was the reason? And how do we understand this prohibition that the Chachamim have introduced, called Amir La'akum, the prohibition of speaking to a non-Jew? If you look at your booklet and you look at page 6, it's a quote from the Rambam, and the Rambam says, the Rambam introduces the chapter with these halachas of speaking to a non-Jew when it's permitted, when it's not permitted, etc. So he introduces a reason why this is prohibited. And he says the following: it's prohibited to ask a non-Jew to do work for us on Shabbos. The non-Jew is not commanded the prohibition of Shabbos. He's allowed to work on Shabbos. So it really shouldn't be any problem with asking the non-Jew to do it. But no, they said it's prohibited. Even if you make this arrangement before Shabbos, you cannot ask a non-Jew to do before Shabbos to do work for you on Shabbos. The non-Jew will be doing the malacha for you on Shabbos. You're only going to benefit from it after Shabbos. So you spoke to him before Shabbos. He's doing it on Shabbos. You're going to use it after Shabbos. It's also prohibited. This is prohibited by an enactment of the Chachamim. That people should not look at Shabbos in a very light fashion. And eventually, if we lived in a world where you were allowed to ask a non-Jew to do anything for you, whatever you wanted to do. Whatever you wanted to do, you could ask a non-Jew to do for you. Any situation, whatever you need, just ask a goy, he'll do it for you. That's going to change the flavor of Shabbos and the Shabbos that we know. Shabbos right now, the concept of malacha pretty much is removed from our minds. We don't do these things. And here, we're busy asking the non-Jew every single time to take care of this, take care of that. Rav Moshe says in a tshuva, we could run our factories on Shabbos. Just make sure you have a non-Jew doing everything for you. You can run your business on Shabbos. You can do everything you want on Shabbos. So Shabbos is going to look like a weekday. Next thing you know, you're going to forget and do it yourself. That's the reason the Rambam says that Chazal, the Chachamim prohibited, that you cannot ask a non-Jew. In order to make Shabbos something which is different, it's unique, it's special, it's different than the weekdays. Now I would suggest the following, that in general, when the Chachamim make prohibitions, they look for, there's two parts to the prohibition. The first step is the motivation, the reason why they're doing it. The second step is when they do it, they like to put it into some type of framework that we're familiar with already before the Chachamim came along. They like to use a vehicle which exists prior to them as how to make it prohibited. So there's a why and there's a how. So the Rambam gave us the why. Why is it prohibited? Because we're worried about people's attitude towards Shabbos. That's the first step. Okay? Now, they need to find a vehicle to prohibit this. Well, let's just make you can't. What's the answer? Where do we have a source? They're allowed to create such a prohibition. It's very nice. It's very important. I understand, but how are you going to do this? So Rashi, I think, gives us two ways to do this. And the first, going back to page number 4. So the Gemara discussion of the Gemara is about a situation where a person is traveling and it's close to Shabbos, and the Chachamim made certain leniencies in that situation to ask a non-Jew to carry your, that situation was carrying the person's wallet, etc. And they allowed that. So the Gemara says, how can they allow that? It's prohibited because it's in Isser of Amir La'akum. So the Rashi explains what's wrong with Amir La'akum. Rashi, the first Rashi and the Gemara, it's shaded. It's shaded. My time shori le lemesiv lenochri. Bareu shluchai lisoena b'Shabbos. If you give it to him before Shabbos, you are appointing him as your agent to carry it on Shabbos. He's going to be your shliach, your agent to do malacha for you on Shabbos. And we know there's a concept in the Torah called shlichus. That many times I can appoint somebody else to do an action for me, and it accrues to my credit, and possibly in some situations it accrues to my not discredit because I asked him to do it. So that's the concept called shlichus. So Rashi is telling us we have a why is the Rambam, and we have a how through the agency called shlichus. So that's one way to understand this prohibition. Rashi in Avodah Zorah gives us a different reason. And that's on page number 5 in the booklet. And also, again, it's shaded. That which we find that a Jew is prohibited to tell a non-Jew, do this for me. Why is that prohibited? Zel mishum, the pasuk says in Yeshaya, mim sechefzecha, Shabbos is the day which you do not, you refrain from seeking out your interests. V'dabra dabra, and you don't talk. Dibur aser. So Chazal understood this pasuk to mean that conversation about things which are prohibited to do on Shabbos is also prohibited. So then, forget about a goy. I want to have a conversation. Tomorrow I'm going to take a person on Shabbos. Tomorrow I'm planting my garden. You cannot talk about on Shabbos planting your garden because you're not allowed to plant the garden on Shabbos. So you should not be talking about on Shabbos planting a garden. You cannot talk about something which is prohibited on Shabbos. If there are obviously, like any area of halacha, there are certain cases where it's permitted, and you have to know the rules. But that's not our conversation for today. Maybe it's a different opportunity. But so there's a prohibition of speech, of daber daber. There's a prohibition of speech. So this prohibition will now apply if I go to the non-Jew and say, "Can you do this for me?" I'm talking about something which is prohibited. The same way I can't talk about I'm going to plant my garden tomorrow. I can't tell the guy plant my garden today. We're still talking about planting a garden. With the same way, I can't. I have that problem with him. With myself doing it, talking about tomorrow, I cannot ask a goy to do it today. So the problem is the speech itself, the conversation itself, the request itself is prohibited. Whether he does it or not is irrelevant. That's not the point. So the first Rashi presents to me there's a problem when he does the action, he's doing it for me, and that's prohibited. He's my agent. And the second Rashi tells me the problem is the conversation itself is prohibited. Whether he does it or not is a second step. So both are a problem. The conversation itself is a problem, and the action is a problem. Now you remember the Rambam said I can't make the arrangement before Shabbos. So obviously the vehicle that Rashi says of that the conversation is prohibited doesn't apply if I speak to him before Shabbos. I'm allowed to talk about an Erev Shabbos doing malacha. So what's my problem? I'm telling the goy on Erev Shabbos do something tomorrow. There's no problem with the conversation. The problem is when he does it on Shabbos, he's my agent. That's the problem. So the case of the Gemara on page number 4 was a case where you're talking to the non-Jew before Shabbos, and you ask him to carry your item in a way which is prohibited on Shabbos. So the problem isn't the conversation, that the deeper is usher. The problem is when he does it on Shabbos, he's acting as your agent. So that's what Rashi has to tell me. I have a pasuk, it's a pasuk in Yeshaya, which because I'll understand there's a prohibition of deeper. Why is Rashi adding a second problem? And the answer is because this is generating a whole new area of prohibition if I talk to him before Shabbos. Let's say I talk to the guy on Shabbos about doing malacha after Shabbos. So in that situation, there's no problem with him doing work for me. He didn't do any work for me. But the conversation was prohibited. So these two different points in Rashi generate two different halachas. One is, before Shabbos, I can't talk about doing something on Shabbos. Because when he does it on Shabbos, he's working for me. So that's a problem of the action, the agency. And then there's a problem when I talk to him on Shabbos about doing something on the weekdays. That itself is a problem right there. So that's what we have. We have these two Rashis, which give us a framework for the prohibition of Amir L'Hakam. Okay. We don't know yet We don't know yet about what happens if he does it. What's the status of the, what happened? Can I benefit from it or not? We don't know about anything from this Rashi. The issue we were dealing with is the prohibition of doing it, or the prohibition of talking about it. We're not discussing what happens. Can I have Hanoah or not? Okay, let's take it a step further. Let's say the non-Jew comes and decides to do this work on his own for me. So let's think. So according to the problem, which is the problem of having a conversation with the guy, I didn't ask the guy to do anything. I didn't speak to him. There's no Deaver Usser over here. I didn't ask him to do anything. So if the problem is Deaver, there's no problem of Deaver in this situation if the guy comes to do it on his own. What about the second problem? That the guy is acting as my agent. So is do we need to have a conversation in order to create a concept of agency or not? So this is a general question. I'm going to throw the... We're familiar with this question, not only in Hilchos Shabbos. Okay, is it possible to become a shliach for somebody without him asking me? So I'm walking down the street and I see something which is hefker. And I know I don't really need it, but my neighbor really needs this. He didn't ask me to be his agent. He didn't appoint me. I'm not his proxy. But I would like to my own to go and take this item for him and make it his. So that's a concept called skia, which for the vast way most opinions understand the concept of skia works through a vehicle of shlichus. It's a form of shlichus. So it means I can become your agent and your proxy even though you didn't ask me to do it. So shlichus is possible without being asked. So that's a very important point. The shlichus is possible without being asked. So now let's move into the situation we just mentioned. The non-Jew comes on his own and decides to do it for me. So if he becomes my agent, even though I didn't ask him, so I'm going to have a problem, the non-Jew is doing something for me. That being said, that'd be a very big burden sometimes. The Chumim will put a very big burden on me. I can't always control what the non-Jew is doing. The Chumim can ask me, excuse me, don't ask the goy to do this for you. That makes sense? But the goy comes on his own. What do you want from me? All right, why is it all of a sudden he's doing me a favor? I didn't ask him for the favor. I don't want the favor. I really wish he didn't do the favor. It's not such a big favor. So are we always going to create such a problem? He's doing me something which is, at the end of the day, it's beneficial in a physical sense, but not necessarily beneficial in a spiritual sense. Are the Chachamim going to burden me and saddle me with such a problem or not? So the answer is it depends. And that's what we're going to try and focus on right now. We have our background. We have that there's two vehicles. We're going to discuss possibly the main focus of the shiur is going to be a case where the non-Jew is doing it on his own. What are my responsibilities, and when am I burdened and saddled with his actions and when not? Okay, so let's see page number 7. So we have a Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Nachri, again, it's the shaded part of in the Mishnah. Nachri shehidlik as a near, a non-Jew lit a candle. So Mishtamesh la'oro Yisrael. A Jew can use the benefit of this, the light of the candle. However, v'im b'yishra Yisrael, osir, but if the non-Jew lit it for the Jew, then the Yisrael is not allowed to benefit from the action of the non-Jew. So we're going to say that since the non-Jew did it for the Jew, you can't benefit. We don't know why yet. We just know the fact that you cannot benefit from what he's done. And the Mishnah gives two more examples, and the more explains why we need two more examples. The next case is where he drew water from a well, which is a Rishus HaYachid, out to the street, which is Rishus HaRabim. So he's done the act of taking something out of Rishus HaYachid to Rishus HaRabim, which is a malach on Shabbos. Can I use the water afterwards? He used the water, he pulled out the water to feed his animals. Can I use the leftover water that he pulled out to give my animals to drink? So Mishnah says again, I may use it. However, if he did it for me, I cannot. The third example the Mishnah gives is a boat is coming to land, and they need to create a ramp to allow the people to disembark from the boat down, off to the shore. And a non-Jew on the boat builds this ramp. So if he did it for himself, not for me, I can use the ramp after him. However, if he did it for me, I cannot. So three scenarios. If he does it for the Jew cannot benefit from what he's done. Okay? That's the Mishnah on Daf Kuf Chav Beis, page number 7 in the booklet. So three scenarios where we have a prohibition of benefiting from what he's done. Let's look at page number 9. And we're going to see something very interesting. So page number 9, we have a Mishnah, which is actually a page before in the Gemara. We put the two Gemaras out of order. So the Mishnah says like this. A person has a fire going. So now, just halacha l'maisa, there's a fire going on Shabbos. Something has caught, there's a danger to life. Obviously, you do whatever you have to put out the fire. Either you call the non-Jew, you do it yourself, if there's danger to life. What's the situation where there's danger to life? That, get everybody out of the house. Well, there's houses in close proximity. The wind can take it from the next house. The next person doesn't know. Realizes there's a fire. Maybe there's somebody elderly who can't get out so quickly. There's somebody very young. So in the case where houses are in close proximity, that's not this issue. Definitely, that's not the issue of this Mishnah. In that situation, you need to address the fire. However, in a case where there's no danger to life, the house is it's out in some secluded area, there's no trees nearby, there's nothing which can carry the fire any further, there's a big moat around his property, right? Big moat with a lot of water, and he has alligators in it, right? So there's nobody going near his house, it's just his house catches on fire, and there's three people in the house, and they all run outside, no danger to life. So now what? So now the issue isn't because Sakonis the Fosh is, Pikuach Nefesh. Now the issue is I want to save my house. So am I allowed to ask somebody to put out the fire to save my house? Well, putting out a fire is one of the malachas on Shabbos. You can't now let a new keeper, you're not allowed to put a fire out. So Mishnah says, Nokri Shabor Lakabis. If a non-Jew is coming, he says, wow, he sees a fire, and he knows that Reingold will very much appreciate it if he puts out the fire for him, and he comes to put out the fire. So, Ein Omer Loi Kabed, you cannot tell him put out the fire. You cannot give him a command to put out the fire. You cannot do Amir La'akum to ask him to put out the fire. Okay, that makes sense to us. Va'al Techabed, but you don't have to tell him, stop. You don't have to tell him, don't put it out. He comes in his own to put out the fire. I say, great, put out the fire. Goy doing work, that's not your responsibility. So the Mishnah is telling me that a goy is doing the work on his own. I did not ask him, but he's doing it for me because he doesn't. It's not for his house. He needs, because Reingold needs to have his house fire put out. All right, imagine Reingold lives out in this big mansion, you know, with the moat around it. Right, that's not. But let's say maybe we would. Right. I had a situation. I was once giving a shiur. It's back in Cleveland. I was giving a shiur. The halachas of fire breaking out on Shabbos. So a group of people, which were fairly learned, etc. And the parallel shiur, which was given the same night, it was part of a night program, which we gave, was people who were not frum yet, and they were learning Pirkei Avos. So the my mazel, the night I was giving the halachas about putting out fires, the other maggid shiur didn't show up. So the person, the organizer, put everybody in one group. The people who weren't frum yet were supposed to be learning Pirkei Avos, were all of a sudden learning about the lachas of when you're allowed to put out a fire and when you're not allowed to put out a fire. So one of the guys looked at me and says, Rabbi, do you mean to tell me that in case there's no danger to life, you're not going to put out the fire? You're not going to call the fire department? So I'm looking at this guy. I know this guy. He lives out in Cleveland. Lives out in an area called Pepper Pike, on a mansion. I know that in the mansion, there's nothing nearby, and there's no danger to life. Him with his two kids and his wife, right? And he's picturing his $1.7 million house on fire, and he's thinking about, are you going to call the fire department or not? So I said to him, you know, I hope I'll do the right thing and not call the fire department. He says, Rabbi, you're crazy. Okay. He, Baruch Hashem, did become frum eventually, and maybe he moved out of that house into the frum neighborhood. Okay. So the goy's coming to put out the fire. I'm not mechuyev to stop him. He's doing malacha for me on Shabbos. It's definitely beneficial for me. I would like to save my house. It's a great idea to save my house. It's worth a lot of money, $1.7 million. I really would prefer that. And when the insurance hears, you didn't let the guy put it out? Well, I don't know, right? So I might lose $1.7 million. No, don't stop the guy. It's okay. Why is it okay? He's doing work for me on Shabbos. The next mission says he does work for you. You can't benefit from what he's done. Okay? So that's the question, what you need to understand. Now the Gemara says, one second, what was the scenario? Why exactly is this permitted to have this non-Jew do this work for you on Shabbos? So the Gemara explains, the Mishnah, the part which is not shaded in the Mishnah, says, let's say a child was coming to put out the fire. You have to stop him. Now the Mishnah doesn't say your child. She says, a katan, a child. So the Gemara says, aha! There's a famous discussion in the Gemara in Yevamos, whether I have responsibility for somebody else's child to stop him from doing averus. My own child, obviously I do, but somebody else's child. Am I mechuyev? I see somebody else's child doing something wrong. Am I mechuyev to step in and say, don't do that? Is that my responsibility? It might be a chesed. We're not discussing chesed. We're discussing responsibility. Am I mechuyev to step in? So that's called bezdin, a katan ha'ochel nevelus, a child which is eating something which is prohibited. Bezdin metzuvin alav la'afrisha. His bezdin is commanded to take the child away from the aver. So you see from over here that you have to do that. So Mora says, no, that's not true. The case was that the child is a child being aware that his father wants him to do it. So he's doing it for the benefit for the father. So Mora says, okay, we're doing a parallel case. Mishnah is always parallel. You have a case of a child benefiting the father and a non-Jew benefiting the Jew. And the non-Jew is permitted and the child is usher. It means the case of the non-Jew is doing it for the Jew. Why in the world would that be mutter? That's the Gemara's kasha. Why would that be mutter? So Gemara says, not, the last line before the next Mishnah, it's in that block which is shaded, the gray shaded, the last line of that block, Nochri ledaita denafshi ob. The answer is a non-Jew does it for his own work, own interest. So Rashi explains, what's his own interest? He understands that after Shabbos, I'm going to pay him for what he did. His focus isn't because he likes Reingold and he wants the Reingold a favor and he wants to make sure Reingold has a house. His focus is because after Shabbos I say, wow, you saved my house and it's worth $1.7 million. I'm going to pay you nicely for that action. So his focus is not me, his focus is himself. Whereas the child's focus is he wants to benefit, and wants to give it, he's interested in the father's interest. Okay, so the mission is telling me that when a non-Jew does it for his own benefit, his own interest, then it's going to be mutter. Comes along Tosfos, and back on page 7. Now, we're not going to have time to do the whole Tosfos. There really are three parts to the Tosfos. So the first part of Tosfos wants to know, in this prohibition, which we have in the Mishnah, again, the Mishnah says, if a non-Jew lights a candle for the Jew cannot benefit. Who's prohibited? Which Jew? So first point, it says all Jews. There's a Gemara in Beya, which talks about only the person who was done for is prohibited. That's talking about when it's an Issa D'Rabbanan. Issa D'Raisa, everybody's prohibited. Issa D'Rabbanan, only that person. First point in Tosfos. Second point in Tosfos says, there's a difference between a Jew who does work on Shabbos and benefiting from the work that a Jew does on Shabbos, B'shoigeg, let's say, and when a non-Jew does it, it's the second point in Tosfos. The third point of the Tosfos is, he says, I have a steer between Mishnayos, and that's what we want to focus on. This Mishnah says that if it's for the Jew, it's Aser. And the previous Mishnah says, the Goy is putting out the fire, it's doing it for himself, he's not doing it for me. He says, it's Mutter. I don't have to stop it. So that's Tosfos' question. So if you look at the Tosfos, it's about halfway down the Tosfos, on page number 7, the gray shaded Tosfos. It's Tosfos about halfway down, the last word in the line, velo. Velo. Velo, the only one velo at the last word in the line in the Tosfos. Okay? Velo domi loho domer liel, nachri shabo lechabes, ein ormen lo kabe, val techabe. You don't have to stop the goy. Vahacha osr, kasha oysa b'yisra Yisrael. And over here it's prohibited when the goy is doing it for the Jew. Now, this prohibition of benefiting from the non-Jew's work applies for Shabbos, and after Shabbos, the time it takes to have accomplished that action. It's called Bitleisha Yasu. So the goy went and picked apples. So I say, well, how long does it take to pick apples? Well, you have to get out to the orchard, have to come back from the orchard, and they have to do the action of picking it. They came back with a bushel of apples. The whole thing would take about 2 hours to do. So it's prohibited to use benefit on Shabbos from the apples that he picked, and that continues after Shabbos for another 2 hours. After that, it's mutter. So I have a great answer. I don't see any contradiction between the two Mishnayos. The Mishnah is over here is telling me I cannot benefit from it on Shabbos. And the Mishnah 4 is telling me I don't have to stop him, and I'll benefit from it after Shabbos. I can't move back into the house on Shabbos. I can't benefit on Shabbos. I'll benefit after Shabbos. That would be a simple answer. But Tosfos does not say that. Tosfos does not say that. Tosfos sees that any time where there's going to be the Hanoah is prohibited, there's going to be a responsibility upon me to stop the non-Jew. So Tosfos says, so now, if so, we have a contradiction. If every time the Hanoah is prohibited, I have to stop him, so why over here, in the case of the Mishnah, don't I have to stop him for putting out the fire? So Tosfos says, the difference is simple. That which we say the guy is doing it for his own interest, and that's why it's permitted. It's referring to putting out a fire. The way the Ron says it is, it's not a direct benefit. He's taking away a problem called a fire, and I end up with a house. He's not giving me something, he's taking something away. I'm getting the light. He put on a light. I'm getting a benefit, direct benefit. That's prohibited. Now, according to Tosfos, let's finish off the thought. I did not ask the goy. But if it's a benefit which is directly benefiting from it, I cannot benefit, and I have to stop him. According to Tosfos. In a case where it's an indirect benefit, so I'm allowed to have that benefit when he did it, I don't have to stop him if he does it on his own. So now let's think about the famous example of your Shabbos goy. The Shabbos, it's very dark in my house, right? You know, the lights went out, the timer is off, or and it's dark in the house, and I can't really see. So I said, great, I'll go ask a goy. Well, I can't ask a goy. I won't say anything, I'll just tell him it's dark, and he'll figure out himself. So there's no Amira. I didn't tell him to do anything. I said, wow, it's dark in my house. He said, yeah, it's dark in your house. That's really nice. I feel bad for you. And I said, no, it's dark in my house. You know, he says, no, it's really, I feel bad for you. Right? See, now, if he asks you, do you want me to put on the light? I cannot say yes, because then I'm telling him to put on the light. That's tzivui already. That's Amir La'akum. Do you want me to put on the light? Yes, I asked him to put on the light. That I can't do. But the guy's not so stupid. He knows Ryan will keep Shabbos. And he said, I don't know the rules of Shabbos, but if the light's off and he's telling him it's dark in the house, probably wants you to put on the light. So he comes to my house, he's about to turn on the light. I say, no, stop! You're not going to put on lights for me on Shabbos. I'm not going to have him put on lights for me for Shabbos. And I can't benefit when he does put on a light for me on Shabbos. So Amir Lachim, in that situation, is irrelevant. I cannot ask him. I cannot hint to him. I have to stop him if he does it on his own, and I cannot benefit when he does it. That's what comes out of Korn HaTosfos. Let's say the situation is the light is on in my bedroom by mistake. I left the light on in the bedroom, and it's really dark. And I can't sleep. I say, you know, it's really hard to sleep in this room. So here he's taking away the light, and now I'm able to sleep. Korn HaTosfos, that's permitted. I don't have to stop him if he does it on his own, and I can benefit from what he did because it's called an indirect benefit. I cannot ask him to do it, because that's Amira. Amira is Osir. But if he does do it, I don't have to stop him, and I can benefit from what he's done. Okay. So Tosfos ties together this rule of what we call the halacha mechor, a protest, stopping him, and benefit, they go together. That's what Tosfos says. Okay. You know what? Let's go to page 14. Considering the time limits. Okay. So the Ramah, it's shaded off on top on page 14 in the Ramah. Ramah says, "Called Darvish also Loimer Leni Hudi Lasoisa B'Shabbes." Anything which you cannot tell a goy to do on Shabbos, Osir Lirmoiz Loy Lasas, you cannot hint to him to do it either. Avamutr Lirmoiz Loy Lasas Malacha Akara Shabbos. You can hint him to do something after Shabbos. So let's understand this Ramah. According to the way we're understanding, it's very simple. I cannot speak to the goy about doing Malacha on Shabbos. Hinting is not called speaking. So the problem of Amira, there's no problem of Amira, I didn't say anything. Alright? But on the other hand, I can't have a goy to work for me on Shabbos. That was prohibited. Even if I don't ask. So I didn't ask anything, but he did work for me on Shabbos. But if he does, if I don't ask, if he doesn't work after Shabbos, what's the problem? There's no Amir and there's no Shlichus. But in a case where I don't ask, but he does it on Shabbos, there's no Amira, but there's Shlichus, because he's doing it for me. So Remez only solves the problem, the Ramah says, when there's no problem with Shlichus. When there's a problem with Shlichus, i.e. he's doing it for me, which is called also a form of Shlichus, then it doesn't, Remez will not help. That's all the Ramah says. Comes along the Mishnah Berurah. Also Lirmois. The Gamza B'Klal of Emir, Len Yehudi, the Kimash HaYodei Rimei Zosoi Oseh B'Shabbos. If he's doing it because of me, so that's still going to be the problem. He's doing something for me. If I tell him something which he understands that I'm telling him what to do, that's also usher. That's not even remez. That's tzivui. And he gives us a strange case, which most people ask me what exactly it means. And apparently, that the problem here is that the wick carbonizes on the top of the wick and it blocks the light of the wick. So I need to flick off the top of the carbon on the top of the wick so the light will light better. You're not able to do that on Shabbos. But I want to ask a goy to do that. Well, I can't ask a goy to do that. I'll hint to him. And there was a code word that they had for hinting for that. It doesn't help either. You're telling him what to do. Now, I don't tell him what to do. The candle is not giving a good light. I can't read because of the carbon on top. And the goy fixes it. Sure, it's mutter. It's not a problem of amira. I didn't say anything. I just said I can't read. That's very nice. But what about getting benefits? And what about the fact that I have to stop him when he does work for me? So the Mishnah Berurah says like this: Vein lesser mitam shenehana mimalacha shasa any hudi bishuloi. I'm benefiting from what the goy did. So Tosis told me there's a difference between direct benefits and indirect benefit. This is direct benefit. The light works better. No, deinzah no kolkach. The gam mikodem hoyyochol piyatchak likris larve. So he says it's not such a big benefit. So now the Mishnah Berurah says it's a privigodim. Says it's not such a big benefit, which means the poskim are telling us now a third group. It's a direct benefit, which is only additional. It's not primary. It's additional benefits. So that solves the problem of hanor. What about mechor? I have to stop it. So apparently, Mishnah Berurah does not seem to be bothered by that. So according to Tosis seems to be saying a rule: whenever there is no iser of hanor, there's no iser of mechor, no chiyuv of mechor. Whenever I am allowed to benefit from what he did, I don't have to stop him when he does it. So the Mishnah Berurah would be in the following scenario. I'm in my house, and there's one light on. Only one light is on. And it's very hard to read in there, but it's doable. All right? There's, in the dining room over here, there's one light which never goes off. Okay, so I want to ask the goy to turn on additional lights. So if I could not read without it, and now I could read, that'd be a problem. I'm getting direct benefit. But I could read anyway, just more. It's more difficult. So, according to the way this Mishnah Berurah reads, I'm allowed to hint to him to do it. Because I didn't ask him. He did it on his own. I'm not mechuyav to stop him because it's only additional benefit, and I'm allowed to get the benefit also. That's the way this Mishnah Berurah reads. I'm not saying a local lamaisa, you have to ask your local Orthodox rabbi because it's not so simple. But that's the way this Mishnah Berurah reads. Now, let's go back to page number 8. Comes along the Rabbeinu Simcha. This is a quote from the Gos Mordechai. He quotes Rabbeinu Simcha. And Rabbeinu Simcha comes along and says, one second. There's a concept called Maris Ayin. Maris Ayin means that people make assumptions. And Maris Ayin plays a tremendous role in the Isra of Amir Lahakam. There are many scenarios where the guy is really doing it on his own, and people think, he's doing it. I asked them to do it. So where do you draw the lines? It's like this. I have a case where I have a ship. He has a ship. He has a live-in. He has a non-Jewish woman who is in the house who takes care of it. And she wants to light a fire. So now the luck is, in a case where it's cold, I don't mean like it's 55. It could be 60. Talking about it's cold, right? And the heat turned off. So she wants to light a fire. So that's if it's where that's again that's considered a person is ill, would be become ill because of it. The law of the mir lakum is permitted for somebody who is ill. Cold generates illness by people, especially elderly and children. You're allowed to tell the goy directly, turn on the heat. But it's not the situation. The situation is not where it's where there's nobody elderly, there's nobody young. It's not so cold. I can really deal with it. Be more comfortable. And she says, you know, she says she comes and she starts putting adding wood to the fire. She turns up the heat. So do you have to stop her or not? She says, you have to stop her. Because you're standing there. It's your wood. It's your house. And you're not saying stop. What you're really saying, implicitly, what you're saying is do it. So people will see this to say that, ah, Rangel's asked her to do it. Haraya, he didn't say anything. Rangel wants her to do it. So even though there's no Amira, and it's only additional benefits, but if it looks like I'm asking her, it's also prohibited. So anytime, according to the Rebbeinu Simcha, anytime when you're using my items, it's not like she comes and says, you know, it's really hot. She pulls out her own portable heater and wants it's a different story. She's turning on her items. Right? The goy walks into the house, says, it's dark, and he pulls out a candle. I just happen to have a candle in my pocket and matches the other pocket, lights it, puts it, and walks out. He's not doing it for himself. He's doing it for me. But it's his items. So there's no Maris Ayin in that situation. I didn't ask him. I have the right to ask him to use his candle. Obviously, he's doing it because he decided he wants to do it. So if it's additional benefit, it's going to be mutter. But in a case where he's using my candles, he's turning on my electricity, he's turning on my lights, turning on my heater, but it's like, excuse me? You can't do that. That's how the simple reading of the Rebbeinu Simcha is. Okay. So we've learned a lot about the Isser of Amir Lakum. So the Shabbos is not so simple. You can't really hint too many situations because if it's using your items, according to Rebbeinu Simcha, I'm sorry, using your items, it's a problem. If it's direct benefit, Tosfos says it's a problem. You have to, not only can't you hint, you have to stop him when he's doing it on his own. So we've expanded this idea of Amir Lakum that's pretty Yosser. And when he does it on his own, you can't even benefit from it. So the goy comes and says, wow, it's really dark, and he turns on the light. So I ask the goy to turn on the light, I'm mechuyev to leave my house, the Mishavur Paskins. I can't even stay in my house if I ask the goy to do it. If he does it on his own, you can't kick me out of my house, but I can't benefit from what he did. I can't read. He did it on his own. I can't read from it either. Okay. Let's just touch on some of the, just very, 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 very briefly, some of the other pages over here. It's interesting, you should know that Amir Lakum is not limited to Shabbos. The more discusses it in the case a case of muzzling an ox, my ox. I asked the guy, you can't muzzle your animal while it's doing threshing for you. So I said, I can't do it. I'll ask the guy to do it for me. All right, you know, my ox has a very good appetite, and he consumes a lot of the food that when he's threshing ends up in his stomach, not in my silo. So I'll ask a goy, that the goy should muzzle my ox and thresh with it. So Morris says, you can't do that. The Morris presents it as a shiloh, and most Rishonim already passed in, it's Osir. Now, there's no Osir of Dabar Dover in that situation, but it's Shlichus. So Shlichus doesn't apply only to Shabbos, it applies to other Isurim also. There are discussions other to Yomtiv and to Cholamoid. It's for sure true. There's Isur of Amir on Cholamoid, by the way. Whatever you can't do on Cholamoid, you also have an Isur of Amir Lakum on Cholamoid. So Amir Lakum is quite broad. On page number 13, there's a Mechilta, there's a Smag which brings a Mechilta which contemplates possibly that it's an even Osir Deraisa. He says that the Pasuk in Parshas Bo says, Kol Melacha lo ye'aseh bohem. Translated in English, it should not be done. It didn't say, don't do work on Shabbos. It says, it should not be done. It means even if a goy does it, it shouldn't be done. That's how the Mechilta reads that Pasuk. The Smag understands that that's not just a hint, a remez, it's not an asmachta, it's a drasha gemurah. Now, the gemurahs say not like that, but you see, it's possibly a deraisa, it applies to many yisurim, it's also after the fact, you have to stop him if he does it on his own, and that's isur amir lakum. It's quite a problem, quite a challenge, isur amir lakum. I pointed out in the introduction that there are, if you look, go to Shulchan Aruch, Hilchos Shabbos, so Siman Resh Mem Gimel, Resh Mem Dalet, Resh Mem Hei, Resh Mem Vav, and Resh Mem Zayim deal with the issue of Amir Lakum. Siman Reish Ayin Vav is about Amir Lakum. Siman Shin Chaf Hey is about Amir Lakum. There are seven simonim dedicated solely to Amir Lakum. Reish Nun Beis, most of the simon deals with Amir Lakum. Shin Zayin, probably half of the simon deals with Amir Lakum. So there are nine simonim, which are basically with almost total focus on Amir Lakum. And that's besides everything else mentioned. It's the most ubiquitous Isser discussed at Hilchos Shabbos. More than any Malacha Deraisa. Amir Lakum. It's quite a problem. It's quite a challenge how to pass Amir Lakum properly. Okay. Let's just give. We'll go through one or two questions we had on the sheets. Because we started late. So I forgot to... I had this personally, right? The first Shabbos we were married, it was Shabbos Shabbos, because we were ready in our own apartment. It was wonderful. And we open up the refrigerator on Shabbos, and the light is in the refrigerator. It goes on. Right? That's a common newlywed problem. And some people, even they're not newlywed, they have that problem. Right? So I realized on Shabbos, I didn't turn off the light. I didn't push on the button. I didn't take out the bulb. Whatever I didn't do. So what can I do? So I want to ask a goy to open my refrigerator for me. But he's going to turn the light on when he opens the refrigerator. So look, that's mutter. Why is that mutter? I say, open a refrigerator. Did I talk about lights? I talk about refrigerators. There's no Amir on lights. No Amir on that. I made him a shlich to do what? Open a refrigerator. So what do you do? He opened the refrigerator. So any situation where the Lacha said it's a psik resha, which means what I'm doing is A. But A will inevitably cause B. I didn't discuss B. So Jew cannot do that. But there's no way to have Amir Lacha in that situation. So I can ask a goy to open the refrigerator because there's no Amir and there's no shlichus. On the result, my job is, I gave him a job, open a refrigerator. So that's 100% mutter. That situation is 100% mutter. Okay, some of the other examples that we had on the question. So
can we do it on purpose?
Can you?
With the goy?
We don't need them.
I need a light in a certain room, and now it's dark. I want to send him to bring something from this.
So
knowing that he's going to do it, and I'm doing it on purpose.
That might be a little bit different, because if he understands that my goal is to turn on the light, so then he's doing turning the light for me. So that you'll have that problem with doing it for me. If he doesn't understand that, it will be permitted. Yes. Okay. Let's say.
Can we do a silent show around at the end? 5-10 minutes.
Yes, I remember what he wants. Right. Let's say we get an example. The Erev went down on Shabbos. I remember we had this halacha l'maisa, and I was in charge of the Erev back in my yeshiva, in Tel Yeshiva. The Erev broke on Shabbos, and we needed a guy to do a malacha d'oraisa to fix the Erev. Is that permitted? So are we allowed to have a guy to do a malacha d'oraisa in that situation to prevent people? People don't realize the Erev is down. People will be carrying. People will be doing yisurim. Are you allowed to ask a non-Jew to do that? So there is an opinion which says, for the tzarech of mitzvah, even a malacha d'oraisa is permitted. We don't paskin like that. However, in a situation where it's going to affect a rabbim, a whole community, it's permitted. So in a situation where an Arab would go down on Shabbos and we could have a non-Jew fix it and prevent people from carrying on Shabbos, we'll be permitted to tell a non-Jew to do malacha. Okay, let's go to the case over there, the circuit breaker trips on Shabbos. So circuit breaker trips on Shabbos, and now I want to ask a non-Jew to fix it. So I can't ask him to fix it. He's turning on my circuit. He's turning on the electricity. That'll turn on my refrigerator and my stove and my lights, whatever's going to turn on. So I'm asking, I can't ask him to do that. What about Remes? Can I hint it in? Well, again, let's see. He wants to do it on his own. Do I have to stop him? He's giving me direct benefit. He's giving me lights. He's giving me heat. He's giving me warm food. He's giving me something directly. So that would be prohibited. Let's say there's somebody in the house that the power went out, and there's someone in the house who's ill, and he needs heat, but this fixing the circuit breaker will also turn on the heat and the cholent, etc., to turn everything on. That's mutter. Once he's allowed to do it for the tzarech of the chayla, there's a valid need to do it for somebody which is permitted. So let's say we have an apartment building, and there's 12 apartments in the apartment building. There's 11 Jews and one goy. And there's a superintendent who lives on the bottom. The power goes out in the building. So this Ramosh already said, the superintendent is doing it. The mission says it depends who's the roiv. That's not, would not apply over here. Because even there's only one person in the building, he has to he as a superintendent must turn on the power again for that individual goy. So once he's allowed, he must do that. He's not doing it for me, because even if I would not be there, he would do it anyway. So that's not called he's doing it letzarech Yisrael. It's called he's still doing it letzarech Na'akum, and the rest are benefiting from Mela. So that's not a problem. Now, it's too hot in my house, and I would like to go to turn on the air conditioning. So I can't tell him to turn on the air conditioning. I can't do that. Let's say, all right? He turns it on. Can I benefit from it? Well, it's just a little bit cooler. The Russian says no. The coolness that it added wasn't just an indirect benefit. It took away the heat. You know, that's a real lumnish yeshiva swore, right? No, he cooled the house. That's called a direct benefit. So, is that mutter? So there is a heter, which we don't have time to really probe, which is a fascinating heter called shruz to shruz. If what you're asking a guy to do is not a melacha deraisa, it's only melacha derabanan, there are certain leniencies. Shruz to shruz, if you ask a guy to do something which only derabanan, you're allowed to do it tzarech mitzvah. So we live in an area where there's no reshus harab, and the person wants to go to shul. So you want to ask a non-Jew to purse the, there's no Erev, but there's no reshus harab, so you're carrying it rabbinically. So there's a person who can't get it, he needs somebody to push his wheelchair. So the non-Jew, Emir Lakim, it's one derabanan, pushing a wheelchair through such an area is only derabanan, it's two derabanan. The tzarech mitzvah, he wants the tulum and tzibur, so that's going to be mutter. So shuus to shuus, the tzarech mitzvah is permitted. Shuus to shuus, the tzarech hesed meruba is permitted. Shuus to shuus, for the needs of tzar gadol, it's very, very uncomfortable, is permitted. So the Dayan Weiss and the Tshuva says, if I ask, in a case where it's very uncomfortable, I want to ask a guy to put on air conditioning, turning on air conditioning is only rabbinic, and I don't want to get involved why, that's a whole separate conversation, but assuming that's only rabbinic, so it's a non-Jew, one derabanan, putting on electricity, which is only a derabanan, if there's no lights, and it's not doing any prohibited malacha per se in the machine, the tzar gadol is going to be permitted. So that was the example where it's permitted. Okay, there are many other things we could talk about, but it's getting late. Yes? Okay, so we're going to do the following. Rabbi Lapiansky now is going to give us some concluding remarks. There is a mincha at 12:50 of those who would like to stay. Those who have to go, we understand. Please, the program is officially supposed to end at 12:30. Rabbi Lapiansky is going to speak now. And afterwards, if it's in the break between his speech and mincha, anybody has any questions, I'm willing to field questions.